is an interview with LaRose Hibbard on October 4th, 2003.
Over the years, I wrote stories or articles for the elder probably 30, 40 years.
When did you start that approximately?
Roughly before the war.
Did you join the Second World War?
Yes. Yeah, I was only 3 years old at the first one. So.
Yes.
But anyway.
But there have been some wars since then.
Yeah, well, yes. About the Second World War, I wrote stories, or if there was something happened in Elgin, I'd report it. And our writing club, the Elgin Stampeders, which I am the only charter member left, we used to have activities, and we camped every summer, took horses into the North Minum Meadows or one of the high mountain lakes, and when we'd come back from the trip, they always wanted an article in the paper, and I wrote several of those, and I was secretary of the Oregon Paul Herbert Association, and I wrote a newsletter that was published about every month with, it was entitled with Paul Herberts Along the Oregon Trail, and I just got in the habit of writing. And
how did you make the arrangement with the editor of the Recorder that you would write weekly articles?
For the Recorder?
Yes.
I don't know. I either volunteered or he asked me, I guess, and I don't remember who the editor was now.
Was there any question of being paid for them?
No.
Well, why did you want to go to the trouble of writing them and having them have them published?
Well, I guess I just enjoyed writing.
Had other people asked you to do it?
Well, I wrote over the years for maybe an organization, maybe it was something that happened or somebody. I generally ended up writing the story for the paper, or when we went camping up the Minum, we went two or three different summers, and they always looked forward to my stories. Some of them were exaggerated a little, but it made good writing.
Yes. What did people say about your articles?
They enjoyed them.
Did they say anything specific?
Well, they enjoyed it, and even yet people say, I wish you were still writing. And of course, the fact is, we have, what is it called now, Valley News, but I think it's been discontinued. He always wanted me to write for him, but I don't know, as I got a little older, and I was moving, my husband was sick, and I just didn't write anymore.
Were you aware when you were writing these articles that you were helping to preserve history?
No, but I always enjoyed history. I always, in school, I enjoyed history.
Did the subjects for the articles just kind of occur to you, or did you make a list of things you were going to write about? How did that happen?
Just occur to me. This little article is about visiting my grandmother's grave, and she came west. Now, this was not this grandmother, another one, and homesteaded up Sucker Creek, which is out of Caldwell. Something would come to me. It's also a little bit about the stock show, or just, it was called Bits and Pieces. Just something come to me.
What means for the writing did you use? Did you start with a pen or pencil or typewriter, or? You didn't have a computer, I'm sure.
No. My girls tried to get me involved with the computer, but told them I didn't want to tax my brain. Yes, and I broke my wrist and arm, and I couldn't type, so they were handwritten. However, my daughter Mary would take them, the last groups that I wrote, and fax them to somebody if you drive on the typewriter.
Sure.
Or the fax machine, mm-hmm. Or type them off so they were readable. And I am a poor writer.
How long did it take you to write each article, do you think?
Well, probably 4 hours, maybe. I'd get my thoughts jotted down the first day, and then I'd kind of go over them and reword them and try to make my spelling so they could read it. It probably, and I did it every week in the paper. Other stories, accountings of things we did in the Stampeders. It wasn't every week, it was just something happened and I'd write it.
Were you writing at all about events that occurred before you were born?
Well, yes. Now this here is about my grandmother, other grandmother, mm-hmm. homesteading and visiting her grave. And yes.
Was that information coming from stories people you had told, or who had told you?
Or my parents.
Were you using any kind of research?
Yeah, I researched that, mm-hmm. yes.
Letters, diaries?
Well, yes, I used to write, Jacob Hug, I think was his name. The Hug family homesteaded up on Pumpkin Ridge, mm-hmm. and he had a diary. Mm-hmm. And his son or grandson gave me diaries, and I'd write from what he'd say.
Sure.
He'd either go to Somerville to the dance on Saturday night, or the family would have a big potluck on Sunday, mm-hmm. and or he was taking apples and something else to Elgin in the wagon and going to the flouring mill at Island City to have his wheat ground mm-hmm. into flour. That, and it was all in that. And I suppose those diaries are still alive, are still around. Mm-hmm. His grandson's dead, but I think maybe they've been preserved.
Too.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
All right. I will look in the museum for the articles themselves.
Okay.
And read many of them.
And when you're in there, there's two things. Let's get the thinking here. One is, see, my dad established the drugstore here. He was the first pharmacist to graduate in pharmacy from Oregon State University in about 1898-99, and there's a copy, a front page of the copy of the Alumni magazine, probably about 7-8 years ago, and it's a picture of my dad, and it says first pharmacist to graduate from Oregon State School of Pharmacy. And now that's down at the museum.
Good.
And the other thing in there is a picture of the inside of the city drugstore, and he established it, and it's the same store down here on the corner. It's the same drugstore.
Which corner?
Well, right down the street.
What's the street name?
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't know, but it's the only drugstore in Elgin. It's right as you turn to go up the toll gate highway,
yes.
And on the corner there. City drugstore.
The very same building.
Yeah, very same building.
It's been a drugstore ever since he had it.
Yeah, and it's kind of unusual. Everybody that's owned that drugstore had two daughters. My dad, and then he sold it to Mr. Foster. He had two daughters. Mr. Foster sold it to Mr. Stringham. He had two daughters. And Derv on the corner, who owns it now, has two daughters.
Well, how do you account for that?
I don't know. It's just a quirk of history,
yes,
I guess.
I think so.
Anyway, there's a picture of the inside of that drugstore, and there's a picture of my dad in the museum down there. Well, now here's a little article. This was the house that I was raised in Elgin, and that was printed in the Observer. I don't know when. And this is a picture of the house.
There's no way of dating this, is there?
I know when the house was built.
Oh, 1921.
And this was probably 28, 29 maybe.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Same picture, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was raised. And this is a picture of my father and mother. And this is about 1928-30. And it's under a weeping willow tree. At this house. Well, you can see the tree there.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken by that tree.
It's Scott and Josephine Harris, father of LaRose and
Marie,
yes. And you've got 1928 or 30 scratched out here. Is that probably wrong?
No, that's about...
That's about right?
Yeah, about right.
All right.
It was under that, see that weeping willow tree there?
Mm-hmm.
It's taken
right
back
next to the house.
In there.
I see a hammock, too.
Yes. I don't remember the hammock, but... I think that hammock is made out of barrel stays.
Oh,
you drilled
yes.
holes
uh-huh.
in it.
You'd need a few pillars on there to
yeah,
make it comfortable, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it had pillows on it at one
mm-hmm.
time. And this is my grandmother that wrote that letter that's in the front part.
Oh, yes. This is Anna L. Harris.
Yes.
Buried at Elgin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've got my grandparents, my great-grandfather, and my mother and father, and my husband and sister and her husband are all buried here at the cemetery at Elgin. And my grandfather was on the first cemetery board, and my mother said he always got enough ground to bury half of Elgin anyway. Still buried 10 or 12.
I don't know exactly where the Elgin Cemetery
just
is.
Just down this road and you cross...
Down 8?
No, this is 8 this
oh,
way.
Down
that
Cedar.
One. Yeah, mm-hmm. and you cross the river, but you can't miss it. You cross the river bridge and it's up on the hill.
Good.
There. Well, I don't know. Some of this you won't want. Now, this is me taken about 1970.
Oh, yes, I want that. There you are, being very cute with ribbons and fur.
Yeah.
This is LaRose Harris Hibbard in 1917.
And this here, I was active in sports when I was in high school. And in 1932, this happens to be 1931, we had the only undefeated girls team
uh-huh.
in Eastern Oregon.
Excellent. I remember reading about that.
Yeah.
And this, of course, is the old Elgin High School that
yes,
I have a picture of
building.
In here. Mm-hmm. Are some of these other young women, now older women, still living?
Well, about 4 years ago, there was 4 of the basketball teams. This lady is still living. She's still living in the retirement home.
She's the one holding the basketball?
Yeah. And this
what is her name?
Ida Snorr.
S-N-O-R-R?
S-C-H-N-O-R-E.
S-Snorr.
Yes, Snorr.
Oh, Snorr.
Yeah. And that's me on the end.
On the front row right end. I have to say these things in the tape
yeah,
recorder so I can remember.
Yeah, right here.
That's right.
Right there.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. on the left on this.
You were one of the shorter ones on the team,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, this was I was just a sophomore. We
mm-hmm.
had our good team the next year.
Oh, I see.
But I enjoyed sports.
Who was the man who was the coach? You said in the previous interview he was a good coach.
He was the superintendent.
Oh.
An elderly man. They were having school problems off and on. Well, not off and on, but you know, sometimes kids kind of get the hand of things.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my dad was on the board. And they decided they needed a new superintendent. And he was an older man. And I think he was of the retirement age, but he still kind of wanted. And so they hired him to straighten out the school. And he'd only been there 3 weeks till we decided, or the kids, I won't say we. Decided that we'd better shape up. And he was a great guy.
Good.
The kids, everybody, you know, and kids need discipline.
Yes.
And they respect discipline.
Surely.
And when he died of a heart attack the second, maybe the third year he was here. And everybody, all the kids that went to school to him felt so bad. And prior to that, we'd had some teachers that kids could get away with things, and they're sharp, even
Whoa.
In those days, you know.
What was this man's name?
F.C. Smith, and he come from Priest River, Idaho, to teach, and his wife was teaching over there the first year that he was here, and then she got a job teaching at Union, and then she continued teaching at Union after he died.
So this is it says volleyball.
Yeah, that's volleyball, not the basketball.
Not basketball.
No.
1931.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, and you do have the names of...
Yeah,
several,
most of them.
Most of them.
Most of them.
Yes.
I don't have the picture of the basketball team. At least I didn't find it. Now, this was about the time I graduated from high school.
Okay.
I got married the next, graduated in 33 and got married in 34, and that's...
This says LaRose Hibbard, valedictorian of the class of 1933, Elgin High School.
Yeah, and you know, on the... Have you ever been in the Opera House?
Yes.
Have you seen the curtains backstage?
Yes.
Well, everybody signed their name, and my name is on that curtain up there. I and a couple of boys, and there's a little peek hole, you know, you could peek out and see the crowd, and it says, the vintage of 1933 is what it says. I look at it every now and then.
Was your graduation ceremony in the
Opera House? We all, in those days, that's where we graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had an alumni association that had a banquet for the graduating class that same night, and we'd walk down the street, and it was upstairs above the drugstore. It was a kind of a lodge hall and a banquet room, and they always had dinner or banquet in those days. It was for the graduating class. They don't do that. And they now, the Alumni Association still meets, but hardly ever any graduating class ever come to it. I don't know, kids are too busy now.
Do you remember anything about your valedictory speech?
You know, someplace along the way, and I don't know just where it's at, I think I have read a copy of it, but I didn't have time to look it up, and I may have it around, I don't know. And I was on a debating team. We had a debating team. They don't have one now. And that one, well, I know what we debated. Resolved that chain stores, I guess, I don't know where that's the word, are detriment to the good of the community, like Safeway and all that. We either took one side or the other, and I couldn't tell you what side I was on. I think I said they weren't, maybe. I don't know what that was.
Well, often on debating teams, you're asked to debate both sides.
Yeah, well, you have a rebuttal, too.
Yes.
And Dick and I was quite active. Well, we were charter members of the Elgin Stampede, and this is we were Grand Marshal of the Stampede Parade, and I don't know what year that was. Probably 10, 11 years ago.
Uh-huh. This is a color photo that says Dick LaRose. Dick and LaRose. Hibbard, Grand Marshals, Elgin Stampede Parade.
Probably, maybe 10 years, 12, something like that. So. And these three pictures, we celebrated our 60th wedding anniversary, and this is my family.
Taking... In front of this house.
Yeah.
Dick and LaRose Hibbard's family at 60th wedding ceremony. The names of the people.
Yeah. That's my grandkids and my two daughters.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And here's the cake.
Happy 60th anniversary, Dick and LaRose.
And here's Dick and I.
Dick and LaRose Hibbard, 60th wedding anniversary ceremony taken in Elgin, Oregon. Yes.
And now this is the sixth generation of that land that Dick's grandfather. He's just born. June the 4th. He's just this year.
Name Nathan Wade Bingaman, 10 weeks. Grandma Rose.
Yeah. And that's my first and only great grandchild.
Uh-huh.
And for years, and I've got some more pictures, they should be together. The Stampeders packed into the high mountain lakes, and they're packing up one of our horses. I've got other pictures that goes with that.
A color photo, 1956, packing the horse, Ginger,
at our horse.
North Minam Meadows.
And here's part of the crew resting at the top of Bowman Basin. You climbed up on top to Bowman Basin, and then you went down about 5-6 miles to the North Minam Meadows. We went every summer back there. We had our own horses, and there we camped all over that country when we were younger.
Mm-hmm. This photo was taken in the 1950s.
And here's one cooking around the campfire, and this is my daughter Carrie, and Dick's giving her pancakes. And this was taken in August of 61.
Mm-hmm.
That was all camping pictures.
1961, with the Stampeders camped at North Mina Meadows.
And there would be from 10 to 12 of us, and then we had, we generally figured two pack horses. I don't know, we'd end up with 20 or 30 horses. And in those days, you can't do it now. But they had poles at each end of the meadow, and when you got in, the horses, we had horses that did get out once. They couldn't get out of the meadow, and it was kind of nice, you know. Can't, of course, nowadays, I guess they can still go in horseback, but you can't turn them loose. And you can't, we used to make a hitching post between two trees, you know, and tie your horses up. You can't do that now. You can put a rope, a picket line or something.
Would these trips usually last about a week?
Week to 10 days, mm-hmm. Yeah. One time we went from Wallow Lake up through Aneroid's a lake behind.
Yes.
Wallow Lake, up through Tenderfoot Pass, and down into the Nauhaw, and that was a nice trip. And there would be away from 10 to 12, you know, people. And of course, we had, well, my husband was his father had a string of racehorses when Dick grew up, and Dick used to jockey as a boy, and he was a good horseman, and we had several Stampeders, you know, ranchers that were good horsemen, knew how to pack a horse.
What was your job usually on these trips?
Well, getting everything ready to go
Once you were on the trip, did you have specific responsibilities?
Well, we all took turns. Everybody had to take their turn. And my husband liked to cook, and he was quite particular about the cooking. So he generally cooked the pancakes and the bread. And then the rest of us, maybe two or three women, would, you know, plan your big evening meal, and they had enough food, maybe sandwiches, lunches. And once you set up a permit camp, well, then you could ride to different lakes too. Maybe they'd go for a day trip someplace. Mm-hmm. I've got a picture someplace, and it's not here. It was during the war, and the North Mina Meadows, for some reason, was closed to fishing. I don't know why, but we camped at John Henry Lake, and then we went down to the meadows and up to, I think it was Steamboat Lake, Green Lake, and a cousin of mine, a boy about 14, and another couple and their girl, and us, and we went, we couldn't fish North Mina, so we went to Green Lake, and Green Lake, for some reason, was overstocked, and they wanted to get rid. We caught, there were six of us, caught 90 fish in about 3 hours. And then we smoked them, took them down and smoked them like the Indians used to, you know. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, we would smoke the smoked fish and bring them out.
Did you use some of those for dinners while you were still on the camping trip?
Well, generally, we'd bring them out, and then we'd have a dinner or a party and serve them, you know, after you got maybe the rest of the Stampeders that mm-hmm. didn't go or something like that. Now, Dick and I were grand marshals of the stock show parade several years ago. Mm-hmm. There's that picture.
This was question mark 1996.
Along in there.
In Union.
Not mm-hmm. too long ago. Mm-hmm. And this was snow one day, year in Elgin when we lived here. We moved off of the ranch in 86 and lived here for 11 years.
This picture is dated 1988.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was what it looked like right out there by that tree.
Uh-huh.
We haven't had a winter like that, but we need one. Now, I was Grand Marshal of the Stampede Parade, and I don't know by myself, and I don't know what year that was. I'd say it's in the last 15 years, maybe.
This American flag appears to be as big as you are.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, when you carried a flag on a horse, you had what you called a boot thing. It was strapped to your stirrup, and then it was that big around, and you set the flag in that.
A flag holder.
Yeah.
Strapped to you.
Yeah, right, to the saddle.
Mm-hmm.
When LeGrand celebrated their when Oregon become a state, was that the 100 years, would that be
1859,
okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, LeGrand had a big parade, and the president of the Stampede said they want us to ride up there and want us to get horses, so I got a horse. And I was carrying a flag that day. We had banners, kind of, we carried. And I shouldn't say this, but my pants were quite thin. And you know, you get to stretch to get on a tall horse. They gave away. And anyway, I carried this banner down the streets of LeGrand, and we had a band behind us. You know what? That made a horse antsy. Mm-hmm. And I just had horror getting dumped down there by the bank with that flag and all. Anyway, we had a lot of good times.
Why do you think you and Dick were chosen to be Grand Marshals of parades?
Well, for years of service, probably, you know. At both of those times, we were senior citizens, and they were recognizing you. And at the Stampeders, they tried to recognize and honor their charter members. Mm-hmm. That's the reason, I would say.
How did you feel about being chosen?
Well, it was an honor, you know. The fact is, I rode in a parade my last parade right here. And I felt it an honor.
Yes, it certainly was an honor. I'm just wondering, more specifically, how did you feel?
Well, I was pleased, in a way. I rode in a lot of parades, and it was recognition, you know.
Did you get tired of waving?
Yes, it's always frustrating, you know, if your horses get antsy. That was Imber had a little 4th of July parade this year, and the Union County Historical Society, that's just the back thing.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw this one when it was published.
Yeah, it was in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my sister and I when we were little kids, about 1920.
Where do you think this was taken? Doesn't say anything on them.
Well, I would imagine about once a year before Christmas, there was a photographer in LeGrand, and my folks would take us kids up there. And my dad, I've used a picture in 1916 of me little on a calendar that he gave at Christmas time. And this would be taken in LeGrand. I don't know whether this was the time, but one time we went up the afternoon after Thanksgiving, and the old road into LeGrand, maybe you've noticed.
Yes, I know where it goes.
Yes, well, it goes down. The fact is, that's part of our pasture up there. Anyway, there was a place up on top by an old apple tree that was muddy, and we got stuck in the car in the rain.
Mm-hmm. That story is in the year.
Is it? Yeah.
Did you know a photographer named May Stearns?
Yes.
Did you have your picture taken by her ever?
I don't know. Probably when this picture was taken. I don't know whether she was in LeGrand.
She came to LeGrand in 1924.
Well, this would be taken in about 1918.
I think it says 1920 on the back.
Yeah, well, that'd be about right.
But otherwise, you didn't have any direct experience with May Stearns?
No. I think
she was quite a bit older than you.
Yeah. this picture probably is dated wrong because I don't think I was 5 years old and my sister, but I was probably about 4 and she was about 5.
So it
don't matter anyway.
Okay.
And this was taken, a picture of me. I don't know whether you're familiar with fraternal organizations.
Oh yeah, somewhat.
Okay, well I was worthy Grand Matron of the Grand Chapter of Oregon Eastern Star in 1957-53, and this was probably taken a little later, but that was at One Lodge Convention, that state convention.
It was a requirement that you wear a fancy dress.
Yes, okay. You couldn't wear pants at it. You didn't always have to have a fancy dress, mm-hmm. but you weren't allowed to wear pants.
Now this says 1957 to 1953.
That's when I was worthy Grand Matron.
Should it be the other way around? 1953 to 1957?
No, that should be an 8. It says 3. If you got a pen, I ought to correct that. This picture was taken 3 years ago over to my daughter's ranch, just with a horse. She took her pictures. And Dick died in 2001, so...
He was 91 here then?
Yeah, he was 92 when he died.
Mm-hmm. May 24th, 2000.
Yes, when that picture was taken. Now this is me with my grandparents, my grandfather and my grandmother when I was about 3 years old, about 1918.
This is the same woman who wrote the letter that we saw.
Yes.
Grandma, yeah. Grandpa, Harris.
Harris.
Rose Hibbert, Uncle Scott's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
1918.
Yeah. And this is me. We lived a... I just moved back here to Elgin about a year ago. After we left the ranch, we rented a small mobile home in the town of Ember, and that's taken up there.
Mm-hmm. 1992. The Rose.
This is me with two little grandkids.
This is Mick and Reba West.
Yes, now Mary and Russ have two little kids. And this was taken in front of this house.
And
I was on the county fair board for at least 6 years, and I was on the county fair commission for the state rating fairs. Are you familiar
yes.
how the fairs got
yes.
the money?
Yes, yeah, you explained that in the
yes,
as
and
you do.
Each point was worth a dollar,
mm-hmm.
and I rated all the fairs but two. You couldn't do your own fair, and I never got to Polk County. Anyway, pickles was my hobby, and I took these to the county fair in 1998, and I had best of class, and I won all the ribbons for
oh my.
Pickles.
Canning division of
yes, best of
Union
class.
County Fair.
Yeah. Fact is, see the ribbon? It's still hanging right there, one of the ribbons on the corner
of that. That's it, yes.
And this was when we celebrated our 50th anniversary, and we had it at the ranch. We had it there. It was a clipping, an invite, and an observer.
This was 1984. Friends are asked to get on their Sunday best, hitch up the horses and find the trail to the ranch.
And then this is this house taken back probably 15 years ago.
Can you tell me a little about the background of this house?
Well, yeah, it's listed in the Houses of Historical Note in Elgin. It would have been, we put it, when Dick and I moved here back in 1986, we put the flues in here, there was one there and there was one there. You know, in the old days, you had to heat. Well, they would not stand heat. I mean, you could not put a stove in these old flues. So we put in, see that we've got a gas heat over there in the corner. Mm-hmm. We had to put a new flue up on the outside. So, and that's the only thing that kept it from qualifying is a historical house, because that addition was on the out. But it is listed, and there's pictures of it down in the museum, of the houses of historical value in Elgin.
Is there a written explanation of who built it and when?
Yes, a man by the name of, they called him Boss Masterson. He was in the bank here at Elgin, a banker, and he built it. And I have a picture, and it may be in the museum. There was a picket fence around it, and on the whole block off in here was a horse carriage and a barn for a cow and a little orchard out there. And it was built in about 1895 or 6.
That's what I would have guessed.
Yeah, that's what somebody told me. And then I don't know who they sold it to. Over the years, it was known as Indian Valley Lodge, and a Mrs. McClune, it wasn't a bed and breakfast, but it was a place where you could stay. And then when the fair used to be at Elgin, the Union County Fair, and the 4th of July celebration, which was big fairs for Elgin, there's an account. You've heard of the Connollys that live out by Cove?
Yes.
Well, Maxine's a good friend of mine, and her older sister, Vina, was just a little girl, and said she remembers coming to the fairs at Elgin and sleeping in this bedroom upstairs. Mm-hmm. And and when Mother bought it, and she bought it at the end of the war, about 1946. My father wasn't well, and Mother didn't drive, and she was just two blocks from town here, and it was called Indian Valley Lodge. And these two cabins out here were a motel, really Elgin's first motel, and she rented the rooms in the motel, she lived here till she died. Lived here 20 years. I rented it for 20 years. And then it was time for Dick and I to get off of the ranch, so we fixed it up.
Did you ever hear where the plans for the house might have come from?
I have no idea.
It's a recognizable style, so
I know.
I don't imagine somebody local just dreamed it up.
No. This grandfather of mine, that's the picture of him here with me. Now, he built a lot of these early day houses. They came to Elgin in 1890. I don't know whether he worked on it or not. There was an older lady that told me if her father worked on the house, and she guessed about 1896. And I have no idea. We've lowered the ceilings, and they're still tall, but we've taken 3 feet off of these ceilings and insulated. The house is real comfortable. It's cool in the summer. And the same way with the upstairs. But I have no idea. And I haven't delved into it. I don't know.
Have you found any photographs of it in the earlier days?
I've got one of Mrs. Masterson. It was a picket fence, and she's sitting in a rocking chair out on the front. I think it's down at the museum.
Good.
Yeah.
It's certainly one of the more interesting old houses in Elgin, I think.
Yeah. Well, this Christmas time, the Methodist Church is sponsoring it this year. They do it as a money-making affair. They pick out houses and they'll have a tour. And then they're going to end up down here at the church with a buffet lunch or something. And they asked me if I would do the house. And I... I said yes, kind of reluctantly. It's not that I don't mind them coming, but I'm not so young and decorating a house. You know, it's a little work at Christmas
time. Maybe they'll help you.
What?
Maybe they'll help you.
Well, they said they would.
Yes.
But this lady, Rince, lives over there at the cabin. She's awfully good about helping, and I'm not going to go all out, though. Some years I have. But anyway, they wanted it and wanted a little bit of history. And so I don't know what day, and it'll probably be a Friday or a Saturday in December this year. Well, I guess that's about it.
All right.
Now, there was quite a lot of apple orchards. I just pulled this picture out when my dad sold the drugstore. He invested in apple orchards, and this is a little apple orchard looking off toward Elgin, about 1919 probably.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's it. And this is the same picture of the last parade. I was thinking with the parades, my first parade was in probably, I was about 4 or 5 years old, and it was the 4th of July parade. And they had what they called the Liberty Wagon, and it was horse-drawn, and a popular young woman by Bolt, about 20 years old, was Goddess of Liberty. Of course, she stood with up. And then there was probably 30 or 40 little girls dressed in white, teared up, rode the Liberty Wagon. And I can remember my mother curling my hair with a curling iron. And then this last saw, I've been in parades for a long time. And I guess that's it.
All right.
So, things that I've done in my life, if you want them.
Well, may I ask you questions as you mention them?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, I've gone about Daddy's hire in the drugstore. I was a 4-H livestock leader, president of the County 4-H Leaders Association, and State 4-H Leader Association president.
Could you describe what happens at a 4-H meeting typically?
Well, yes, you start, well, it's the 4-H, are you familiar with 4-H clubs?
No, one of the reasons I ask is I don't know what goes on in the meetings.
Oh, well, they have a little bit of, what do I want to say, form that they follow. They they give the 4-H pledge, which is I pledge my heart to someone I've forgotten. They pledge allegiance to the flag, and then they open their business meeting. And if they're getting ready to go to a fair, or it can be cooking, it can be anything. I mean, the clubs nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I was livestock, and my husband was horse leader.
Well, the name 4-H, that stands for 4 H's. What do the H's stand?
They have I've got a pin someplace. It's a clover leaf, and they've got 4 H's, and you know, I can't tell you.
Would it be something like home?
Health.
Health?
It's
happiness?
Something like that. You make this pledge. I pledge my heart to, but I've forgotten. It's been a long time since I lit it. But
what would you say are the ideals of the 4-H?
Well, it's to develop leadership. One of those clippings in there says something. Well, it's leadership, working together, teaching skills and knowledge. And you can belong to a 4-H club that involves about any type of thing, from livestock to sewing to cooking to mechanics to anything, birds or anything.
I thought everything was related in some way to farming.
Well, it originally probably, but a lot of city kids in the Portland area belong. And same way with Future Farmers of America, it started with farming, but nowadays your farming community is in a real minority, so it's any type of club that you're wanting to develop knowledge, and you to
me. It sounds like it's become very similar to scouting then.
Similar is probably, I imagine, 4-H is probably at one time stronger than scouting because they have 4-H county agents, you know, they have hired, they've lost their 4-H agent here in the county in the last year, maybe two, according to budget shortage, you know.
Well, back to the meeting, after the pledges and the formalities, would you have a speaker or would somebody there teach a skill of some kind?
Yes, oftentimes, or if you're getting ready to take an animal to the stock show, you're making a rope halter, or they'll have demonstrations how to fit an animal and get it ready for the stock show. If it's a horse, the same way. I led a cooking and a sewing club, too, and if you've gone to the county fair, you've seen 4-H sewing, and you've seen cooking and demonstrations. I never went. One time, the kids were getting ready to take their steers to the fair, and they were also baking bread, and they'd run out and wash a steer or an animal, and they'd come in and work on their bread a little, and then they'd go back. And anyway, Mary won a blue ribbon with her bread, but Carrie lingered a little too long out working on the animals, and her bread raised and had holes in it. She got a white ribbon. She was quite aggravated.
Where would the meetings, the 4-H meetings, usually be held?
Right now, they're held at the school at Imler, the one up there, in homes, most generally. The horse club one, now Dick led it, and it was they still have it, the Indian Valley Trail Riders. Met at the Stampede Hall a lot when we met there.
Would any given 4-H group be subdivided into boys' activities and girls' activities?
And when I was active in the 4-H State Leaders Association, and I won a trip back to Kansas City to a leadership training, a lot of those Midwest towns would meet in a local place, and then they'd break off into different clubs, maybe a horse, sewing, cooking, and then it was one meeting, but then it went into several different others. They've never done that in Union County. I don't think Oregon has ever taken that approach, maybe. At least they didn't when I was there.
So might there be some boys learning how to sew and cook?
Yes.
Of course, taking care of horses.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Did they pay dues?
Yes, they have a little dues. Mm-hmm. And they would have a money-making project, too, to some of their activities. And now, when Dick was leader of the 4-H Horse Club here in Elgin, we camped at Willow Lake one time, took the horses, and then they rode up to Aneroid and up around. And then another time, trucked the horses out to Heinemann's farm, their kids belong. And then we rode to under Point Promise, I believe, and spent the night. And we had a wagon that trucked the bedrolls and the food and everything. Mrs. Heinemann had the food and ate around a campfire. And the people that had the hardware store in Elgin had a grandson in, and they come out at night with ice cream, little ice cream cups. And then we ended up at Cold, and the kids went swimming, and then the trucks met the horses there. That was one of our better outings.
We had that story in your world.
Oh, is it there too? Well, I should.
All right, what's next?
Well, I was district deputy for Rainbow Girls, which is an organization for young girls in the Eastern Star.
No. Did that have purposes that were at all like 4-H?
No. Well, yes, the same quality of developing young people, and especially girls, teaching them how to walk and live. And we expected them to be dressed up when they come to the meetings. Mm-hmm. And
when you say teaching them how to walk, what do you mean?
Well, have you seen some kids slump around?
Yes.
And teaching how young women to present themselves in front of the public.
Stop slouching?
Yes, and...
Stand up straight?
Yeah, I better do that myself. and to be just the nice young ladies, fact is, they're thinking about reinstating it in Elgin because they figure a lot of young girls don't need to know how to dress and need to know how to present themselves in front of the public and you and to speak and, you know, speak out in front of people.
Would the Rainbow Organization have said anything to the girls about moral behavior?
Yes, you were expected to, yes. You didn't get into details, but you expected them to be good young women to set an example. Fact is, I was talking this last winter to a lady that was a Rainbow girl before. She said, I wish we had it now. She said, the kids today they just don't have the values that we learned when we grew up. And I won't say that to everybody, but there's lots of, you know, they could help.
Do you think Rainbow could still be a powerful influence on them?
They could, but you know, there's so many activities for girls now, and there's girls' sports that there wasn't when Rainbow was at us. If you're playing on a girls' basketball team, the coach expects you to be there to practice.
But you did that when you were in high school.
Yeah, but I didn't belong to Rainbow. But when we had our strongest Rainbow group here in Elgin, superintendent of schools set aside Wednesday evening for church and Rainbow activities. There was no school activities on Wednesday night. And, you know, there's church organizations. I belonged to two church groups when I was growing up. And that was the night for those activities and no school functions. But you don't find us. And he was superintendent for 17 years, so that was a good number of years. But you don't find that nowadays. There's a lot of emphasis on sports. Well, let's see. I was a charter member of the Elgin Stampeders. I served as treasurer and was on the Queen Court Committee for a good number of years and responsible for the Queen's Luncheon. I served 6 years on the County Fair Commission rating fairs, and I rated all the fairs in Oregon but two. I was on the Union County Fair Board for 6 years, and I was past president of PTA in Embler. Served on the Embler School Board and was chairman in 1970. In 1960-61, I was president of the Oregon Cowbells, or Cattle Women. And I was advisor with Dean Frisnick of Oregon State University to the Junior Poet Herpers Association. And we put on a display in Myron Frank's window during Agricultural Week in Portland, 1969, and I had John Williams, who's a county agent, he was a boy then, over in Wallowa County, George Chandler, that was a grandson of Chandler Herbert and Baker, and a Compton boy, and my daughter Carrie, and we put on this display in the corner of Myron Frank's window. Now this is one of the traumatic episodes in my life. Anyway, there was a doctor's in Portland had two boys that had Herefords, and I contacted them to channel a Hereford calf to put in Myron Frank's window and promised to say they'd do it and all. And these four kids and myself from Eastern Oregon, and we got our meals paid, our room paid, for a week at the Imperial Hotel in Portland to put this display on. And so the kids had to get up and go down. The Chandler boy and the Compton kid from Baker, they brought a pickup down. They had to go down and edge of Portland someplace and pick this calf up and get them in. And they had a beautiful display. Anyway, I was kind of walking up Broadway and heading toward Martin Frank, and the Chandler kid come running down, said, we've got to tranquilize the calf. He's wild. he said, run to the phone and call a vet. So I went back to the Imperial Hotel, and the vet said, oh, he'll be all right. Just everybody back out of the, quietly out of the window and turn him loose. And we had a rail fence. Well, we had shafts and saddle. It was an ice and straw. And so I got out of the window, and I was walking down the steps. You're familiar with Myron Frank, main entrance, and all at once I heard the tinkle. That calf took three circles through that window, jumped right through the window, and sitting on the ground underneath was, you remember when they had all of these hairy Krishnas, these kids mm-hmm. with their hair shaved and the white robes on them, they were sitting under the window playing their guitar. He jumped right over them, and these two boys from Baker jumped right out after the window after they flanked the calf on Broadway. Anyway, we were all in shock. We were just in shock. And there was somebody, now I don't know whether it was Jerry Frank or some executive from Myron Frank on the top floor come down. He said, who's responsible here? And I said, well, I guess I am. He said, was anybody hurt? I said, no. And he repeated it four times. Are you positive nobody was hurt? I said, yes, nobody was hurt. And then he stepped out the window and just laughed and laughed. And they got a big piece of plywood and put it up that day. And then if you'll notice that big window, it was solid plate glass. They had to go to Australia to get new glass. So it's divided. And anyway, that was...
what was the purpose of having a calf stand in the window at Myron Frank, presumably for many hours?
Well, just daytime. Well, it was just a display, and afterwards there was another boy from Oregon City that belonged to my club, and he said, I've got a gentle calf, I can go bring it in. He'd bring it in the morning, stay there, and there was a little calf in the window, and it did draw, we made Paul Harvey about going through the window and the display, and then they had a big steer down on one of the intersections in Broad. It was Agricultural Week in Portland. That's what it was.
I see.
I'll never forget that little.
It's a little like bringing a zoo to a department store.
Yes, I don't. Well, Dean Frisnick, he was head of the animal husbandry department at Oregon State, and he, I don't know. I guess Dean Frisnick dreamed it all up anyway.
And you weren't invited again?
Well, no, I don't think they've ever had it again either. I think they decided
too
that.
Much trouble and risk.
Well, really. I rode in the Elgin Stampede horse drill team for many years and in parade throughout eastern Oregon.
Tell me a little more about the drill team.
Well, there was, and we were an adult team, husband, wife. My husband was a director, but and we've got down at the museum where we've got our outfits that we wore, and we did, square dances on horseback. We moved, and in a gallop, and you did the figure eight, you'd thread the needle, and we did, well, it was a horseback drill team on horseback.
This must have taken a large amount of practice.
Well, every summer from about 1st of June till the middle of July, once a week. And my husband was the drill master, and we took it to Chief Joseph Day's at Pendleton Roundup, the stock show. We were asked to, we were a mounted drill team, so we were.
Would a drill master at that time have had a book or a manual to get ideas from?
No, it was my husband and I figured out what
you figured out what could be done.
What we do. Mm-hmm. We ended up with a big S, which meant stampede, you know. We formed our S and then we unwound it.
Were you performing in a large arena with people in the stands?
Oh, yes. Out here at the Stampede. Yeah.
How long did each routine take?
Oh, 8 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. They still do it. They've never discontinued the drill. And the Stampede's about 56 years old. But they're more kids nowadays. We were an adult team.
Mm-hmm. about square dancing. You weren't standing on the horse, were you?
We were riding.
Yes.
Galloping.
And so you do
we do an alum and lift. You'd bend in and out, mm-hmm. and then you'd meet your partner, and you'd sashay through the middle and turn around like a square.
I should think it would have been somewhat difficult to get the horses to do the right things.
Well, yes, it was a good place to break a horse. Not really. After the first time or two, those horses were pretty knowledgeable.
You think they enjoyed doing it?
No. I don't know.
You know so much about horses, I should think you could tell their moves.
Well, they were ready to go when the music started and they opened the gates.
Was this recorded music or?
Yes, it was recorded music. It was
different kinds of songs, I suppose.
Wasn't songs. There was the one that we used that nowadays they don't. They have their own. It was called the banjo gallop, and you know the horses almost gallop to that rhythm of the tune. You know, it was. It was fun. It was every once a week, maybe twice a week. But horses got so they pretty much knew what they were doing. And we were adult riders. There was one time, there was a couple of the fellows, maybe by Sunday, had a little too much to drink, you know. That goes, and there was one, and I had to meet him on an alum and lift when you were doing that, and I could see that I was going to hit that horse, and I kind of pulled out, and I thought, well, it's just my knee on horse flesh, it's not going to hurt too bad, and so I really should have pulled out a little more, and it did hurt. You know, a horse is pretty solid if you hit it on a gallop, but we had, it was a good drill. And they still do it now. I mean, they still have a drill, but it's a lot of younger kids, all 16 on up, 22 or 3. Anyway. Well, let's see. I was secretary of the older Oregon Old Herp Association, and I wrote a newsletter entitled "With Old Herbert Along the Oregon Trail." I was worthy matron of Blue Mountain Chapter.
Paul Herfords. Would you tell me why Paul Herfords are so admirable?
Well, it's just like any breed. If you're